This is the iPhone Alley Podcast, episode 22 for September 29th, 2008, The Skype Curse. All right, it is time for the iPhone Alley Podcast, the show that discusses all things iPhone, iPod Touch, iTunes, all that stuff. I'm Michael Johnston, and tonight I'm joined by Mr. Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, glad to be here, as always, and thanks for having me on.
Yes, thanks for being here. It's great having you back. You were, where were you? You were at the, I can't remember what that event was called.
I went to the North Coast Mac User Group Mac Computer Expo.
Gotcha. And what was that like in terms of, you know, for those of us who've been to like Mac World or something?
All right. Well, think of Mac World, but then shrink it down to like 2,000 people. And that's what this is. It was really neat. They had like 12 different sessions throughout the day on all different kinds of topics. And they had... It was close to 30 vendors that were there showing off products. And it was really nice because it's a more intimate setting than you get with Macworld. So it's easier to get FaceTime with the different vendors and all that. So, you know, that's really cool. And it was really nice because it had a smaller feel than Macworld, but there was still a lot of people there and a lot of really good sessions. And it's a one-day event, and it's free. So, you know, if you're it's in Santa Rosa. So if you're in that area or close enough that you don't mind driving, then it's totally worth going to. I was really impressed.
Awesome. Yeah, it's I probably won't ever get out there, but, you know, having an event like Macworld kind of shrunk down for everybody sounds great. And next, Chuck Joyner, a new face, joins us from MacVoices.com. Hello, Chuck.
Hey, Michael. Thanks for having me. A new face that concerns me. Did you turn my camera on?
A new voice and a new face. a new individual.
I would have combed my hair if I'd have known.
Yes, you're on camera streaming.
Hey, just
live.
Be glad you have hair, okay? There's lots of guys out there that don't, and they'd be glad to have your messed up hair.
I can't answer that, Jeff. I don't know what to say.
And that's the magic of the podcast. And that voice you heard in the background laughing is Alex Sukaransky, the guy who made Podcaster. Hello, Alex.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. Now, for those who don't know, Podcaster is a native application for the iPhone. It's you know, an actual legit you know, app store style application. And it's made, you know, so what it does is it's a podcatcher for your iPhone. So you can subscribe to podcasts, download them, listen to them. So you don't have to sync to iTunes. And we have Alex on to talk about that because there's a little bit of a controversy going on with that. But we'll get to it in a second. This is going to be a really long, meaty show. And because we missed last week and we almost missed this week, but we're going to try and make it up to everyone.
All right. And you know what? I just have to apologize right up front for scheduling myself for all of these things where I'm out traveling and completely messing up Michael's podcast schedule.
So, oh, it's fine. You're allowed
I'm
to
sorry,
go
world.
Sorry, world from Jeff. All right. So the first thing we're going to talk about, Apple announced that under certain conditions, the new ultra-compact Apple USB power adapter that you get with the iPhone 3G, the really teeny tiny power adapter, the metal prongs can break off and remain in a power outlet, creating the risk of electric shock. So Apple has received various reports of detached prongs, and so they're going to be exchanging all of those for everybody, I believe, in the U.S. and a couple other countries. I haven't had any problems with my ultra compact adapter. other than the fact that it's just so stinking tiny, I don't know if I like this, the really tiny one or the bigger one that has the, you know, the exchangeable plugs and prongs, I should say. But I did hear one report before Apple announced this that Leah Culver, if you know who that is, she she did a lot of the programming for Pounce. It's like kind of a Twitter clone slash thing. I'm sure you most of you know what it is. But she sent out a Twitter saying that, you know, my adapter broke and she had to go out and get another one. And exactly, you know, what Apple's describing happened to her, that, you know, one of the prongs fell out. And so she went and got another one. So they're issuing new ones, to anybody who, I think you can send them in, right, Jeff?
You can send them in and, excuse me, apparently I have a hairball in my throat. You can send them in, or if you wait until October 10th, you can go into an Apple store and they will swap it out for you there.
Gotcha. Okay. So I thought you could do that right now in the Apple stores, but you actually have to wait until the 10th.
Right.
Okay. And so then the way that you can distinguish the new one from the old one, there's a little green dot, right?
Right, it'll be on the bottom, close to where the prongs are.
Okay, and I noticed that the prongs also seemed like they were a little different visually.
Yeah, I mean like they're stuck in still?
Yeah, they're still on there. Yeah, so yeah. I don't know. I haven't had any problems with mine. I don't think any of us have had problems with theirs, or is it just, you know, working fine?
I had mine for a few months now. Mine's been working fine for me.
Okay, yeah. Well,
I barely use it.
Well, and yeah, I think for most people, it's just kind of sticking in the outlet all day, and it's not really moving. But for, you know, people like Jeff, and you know, when, you know, Macworld comes around, and people who go to, you know, expos and all that, you know, maybe a prong will come out at that point if you're moving, if taking it out and putting it back in. So at some point, I think I'll exchange mine. I think I'll just like send it in or something. I'm sure I have plenty of, you know, extra iPod chargers around here. Now the iPhone won't charge with a FireWire power brick, will it?
No, it won't. Okay. You have to use USB.
Okay.
But I haven't tried that with the first gen iPhone. Maybe it works with that.
It's very possible. The first gen iPhone wasn't as picky as far as power goes. You could plug in this. I have a really, really cheap car adapter that really, it works fine with my mother's iPhone, but it doesn't work with mine at all. It says it's not, you know, compatible. I guess it has to have some sort of a chip in it for the 3G. But I don't know. Yeah. So if you, it's probably a good idea to send yours in at some point. I wouldn't say there's a big rush on it if you don't, you know, pull it out and put it back in a lot, but you know, at some point you should probably send it in or take it to an Apple store or something. I will when I, you know, eventually get around to it, probably before I start traveling. So yeah, there's that. And we should, then let's move on to, the App Store rejections. The first thing we want to talk about is regarding, this podcaster app. And you know, if this is the first time you've heard of it, you're probably thinking, wow, this sounds like a really, really great idea. I was really excited when Alex contacted us at the website and told us about it. And so basically what happened was he was all done with it. He submitted it to the App Store for verification, posting on the App Store, and Apple rejected it because it duplicated features in iTunes. Because iTunes has podcatching features. I guess that's the reason that they're stating that Podcaster isn't available. So Alex, what? How long did it take for you to make Podcaster?
I guess it took about a month to build it. I was working pretty much like nights, pretty much during the nights and in the weekends, and I put it together. But I had to learn Objective-C to do it, so that was kind of a pain.
Okay, and so you submit it to Apple, and you get a letter back, and it says, "Sorry, you can't. We're not going to be able to do this." What do you think about that?
I was pretty surprised, you know, I mean, they had a problem with it to begin with. I was shocked for a few days, and then I posted it up, and I saw how shocked other people were, and, you know, it kind of just, it's kind of weird, that's all. I mean, I understand that it's obvious that they just want to keep podcasts, podcasts providing to themselves, and they don't want to let that go.
That's obviously just, you know, very unfair, because podcasting isn't, you know, Apple's thing, obviously. It's, I mean, clearly they've kind of squashed every other podcatcher and, you know, podcast directory listing service of any sort. They're definitely the place to go when you want to get a podcast, but, you know, they should really still stick to, you know, being completely open with it. And doing that is just not fair. And it looks like Chuck dropped out of here, so we're going to add him in. You there?
This will be the last time I'm invited.
So we're just talking about how you know, Apple denied a podcaster. So the big problem I have with this is that, you know, Apple's reasoning for saying, you know, this duplicates features in iTunes. And if you look at it, there are a lot of other applications on the iPhone that actually duplicate features that the iPhone already has. For example, there are quite a few weather applications, but, you know, Apple already has a weather, you know, application on the phone themselves, and they don't care about that at all. You know, there are many tip calculators that, you know, there's already a calculator on the phone, and it's very, very frustrating when you're thinking about the App Store. The fact that they have all of this power over, you know, every single application that can be submitted, you know, it makes you wonder, what else are they going to reject from the App Store? It took you a month, you said, to build this application, but it certainly took time, and you signed up for the developer program. It, you know, cost you $100 to do that. And at the end of it all, they said no.
The whole process was a real pain, and it was real long. It was not that well documented. It was just hard to follow everything. You had to read everything two or three or four times, you know. They could have made it easier.
Well, the thing that I have a huge problem with is that they have, you know, they have this, I assume they have a set of rules that, you know, they haven't shared with anybody else, you know, with regards to what can and cannot be put onto the App Store. And, you know, Steve mentioned a couple of those things, you know, things that, you know, compromise security and, you know, porn and stuff like that, some of the obvious stuff, but they haven't actually given us a real list and said, developers, here's what you can and cannot do. And so that tends to, you know, waste a lot of developers' time. And I don't think you can actually go to Apple and say, hey, I'm planning to make this application. Is it something that I can do, or are you going to be against it?
Well, maybe, you know, hopefully they'll implement something like that. You know, the App Store is pretty new, and you know, you don't know how they're judging it now, but hopefully they'll listen to people.
All right. So anyway, Skype was having a little hiccup and a little problem. So we're back, though. We're talking about Podcaster. This just doesn't seem like it's very good that Apple has this, you know, amount of control over the App Store. I mean, it's really difficult to understand whether or not they're being you know, really, you know, overly controlling of everything and saying, oh, I don't like this. This could probably, you know, interfere with future business plans, or, you know, we just don't like this because we don't like that guy, or, you know, they're just picking because they feel like picking, you know, to reject an application. Or if they're just so completely confused with, you know, what's going on the App Store, I can certainly imagine that, you know, that's possible. Looking at, you know, how the App Store, was organized when it launched, all the problems that it had, and all the problems that it still has. It's very concerning. Chuck, what do you think about all this?
I hate to tell you, Michael, I'm not sure I completely agree with you. I don't have as much problem with Apple deciding to control the store in whatever fashion they want. It's their store. Now, I'm quick to follow that up with saying it certainly makes sense for them to put as many decent applications in as they possibly can. The part that I find the most disturbing about this whole deal is just the inconsistency, that there seem to be apps already in the store that duplicate core iPhone functions. They may do it a little better. They really may do it just about the same, and they were accepted. To have Podcaster rejected for this particular reason does bother me, and especially when you look at it, Alex has done a good job of adding some features that they don't have. So I don't mind Apple rejecting an app out of hand. Just say that you're going to reject it out of hand. but don't do it the way you're doing it with what I don't see as legitimate reasons.
Well, the problem I have with the whole, you know, Apple rejecting applications for these sort of reasons is that, you know, this is the only way that applications can get onto the iPhone outside of, you know, the ad hoc building, which really doesn't help most consumers. It's just, you know, the iPhone is supposed to be a platform that, you know, developers can, you know, comfortably work with and consumers can feel fine about, you know, getting all their applications from. It just does not seem like a true platform. It seems kind of more like a cell phone with all this control surrounding it. And I can understand, yeah, they want to look through the applications and make sure that it's not going to you know, cause any harm to the phone or the experience and not going to compromise any security. But those reasons should be completely separate from, you know, business reasons, you know, something, you know, that duplicates features. Who cares if it duplicates features? If you know, someone wrote an application that was exactly, you know, the mail application, exactly the same thing, exactly the same list of features. It was just laid out differently because some people wanted that. They should still allow that. There should be no problem with allowing something like that, especially if they allow crap like, you know, all the, you know, thousands of, you know, light applications and tip calculators and you know, stupid things like that. You know, there was another application called Mail Wrangler rejected for the exact same reason, as far as I can tell. And the cool thing about Mail Wrangler is that it's, as far as I can see, it's specifically made for people with Gmail accounts, which is something that I use, and I would really, really appreciate a native Gmail-style mail application on my iPhone, because I, you know, mail on the iPhone is great, but it just does not work the same way that, you know, Google does with, you know, archiving and tagging and all of that stuff. But you know, I deal with it, but this is just really, it just seems really bad. Jeff, what's your take on all this?
Well, okay. So first off, I would love to see Podcaster on the iPhone. It would have been great for me over the last couple of weeks when I was traveling and I needed to download new podcasts. It's a no-brainer application to me. So I would love to have it, but there you go. Now I can't. As far as this whole consistency thing goes with which applications are being granted to the App Store, which aren't, I don't know if it's consistent or inconsistent, because Apple isn't giving us transparency in the way they're vetting all these programs. So it may very well be that this is a very well-structured setup, but none of us know about it because Apple won't say.
Yeah, and that's one of the huge problems with, you know, the way that Apple's, you know, dealt with us over the years. And, you know, that's fine for the most part with, you know, keeping quiet about new products that are coming up and all of that. But something like this, as well as, you know, having the NDA, you know, still looming over the developers' heads, really is, it's not helping them at all, as far as we can tell.
I just want to go back to the distribution. I mean, they got to have, it's weird to not have any other distribution methods. Like, if you don't allow me into the store, that's one thing, but you should have, I should be able to distribute it myself and have people buy it.
Yeah, and I think you were actually doing something like that. You were using your ad hoc privileges to sell Podcaster to people who wanted it, right?
Yeah, but that was hard to provision everybody. You know, that wasn't something that I could keep up. You know, I would have to eventually quit doing it.
Yeah.
You can't provision every single user. It's too many.
I'm back. We're live. Thanks for calling in.
And Skype just does not want this podcast to work tonight.
This podcast just doesn't want to happen at all.
No, it doesn't.
This has been like just a torturous trial of errors for you.
I think
with scheduling and now Skype. And
I think once we get past this one, it's going to be fine. It's just like a curse and we need to break it.
Well, we were talking about distribution in the outside of the App Store. I don't know. I mean, do you guys think there should be another distribution method besides, you know, that anybody can do?
You know, I would like to see another distribution method, but practically speaking, I cannot imagine Apple ever going for that. I think it's going to be the App Store and jailbreaking, and those will be the options.
Well, first of all, I think jailbreaking is great. I think I jailbroke my phone like 2 days ago for the first time, you know, since I originally got it, and then I restored it right away. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like getting two additional app stores. So, you know, it didn't restore anything on my phone. It didn't move any of my icons. It was pretty great, actually.
So you did the quick pwn thing?
Yeah. It took maybe like 2 minutes, and it was done.
So how do you... How do you like Cydia and an installer?
They both work really good. I mean, they're pretty much alternatives to the App Store. I know Installer probably has more apps right now, but I was just looking around. I mean, a lot of the stuff is just really nice on there. I like being able to FTP into my phone now whenever it's on my network now.
Yeah,
I mean, that's just really convenient. But
it,
I don't know, is there an app like that in the App Store?
Well, there are various applications that you can use to remotely, you know, store files and all that. But there's nothing that'll allow you root access to the phone itself.
So it's just sandboxed in that folder.
Yeah, it's just sandboxed. You know, I don't know that. I guess that maybe the solution in the long term is for people to continue looking at these. Getting their applications through a jailbreak. Now, are you planning to distribute Podcaster through Cydia or Installer?
Well, yeah, I was going to put it on Cydia because I don't really have to change the code at all. And then I was going to – I noticed that a lot of people have been emailing me telling me that they have, I guess, modified installers on their phones that they could just install the same way as my users have been doing, like drag into iTunes, but they don't even – need any provisions or anything. So
oh, interesting. I hadn't heard
those
about
users
that.
Will be able to just use that, you know, put that up. If I get instructions, I'll put that up somewhere. I'll link it up on my site.
Yeah, well, yeah, if you don't even, well, I assume you'd have to actually jailbreak though, right?
Well, I think it's like a method of jailbreaking, but you actually put on a new firmware that has like all the code signing, I guess, taken out of it, never even looks at it.
Oh, I
see.
So
it works more like your computer at that point.
Yeah. Well, because if you have a jailbroken phone and you take an application that just has a provisioning file, something like an ad hoc application, and it doesn't come through the App Store, that doesn't have any DRM in it. So you can actually, if you have a jailbroken phone, throw it in there into the applications folder using FTP or whatever, and that application will work just fine. And it won't get, you know, some of the interesting stuff like it, the rounded corners for the icon, and it won't give you the glossy on top of it because it assumes that it's a pre-installed application and you can't just delete it by, how you would normally delete an application. But aside from that, for the most part, applications do work. And I was talking to Erica Sadoun about that earlier, and she mentioned that some applications need special privileges. So that method won't work. But I do know that a lot of applications that are pirated from the App Store that have the DRM either stripped out or hacked or something like that, you can add applications that way. So it really comes down to the DRM and the file, the code signing. But I wonder if we're going to see a lot more of this moving back toward the jailbreak to get these applications that Apple isn't allowing. Chuck, you were. What do you think about this?
I've said it before. I don't like the fact that I'm going to have to jump through hoops to get apps on my phone that I really want. I mean, I can take Apple's position and argue it, but speaking as an iPhone owner, no, I want every app available to me as much as possible. It is concerning to me that we have to go down the jailbreak route because that means every time that Apple does an update that you want to install, you've got to jump through that hoop again, and you never know whether the application author may have to do some updates. So I just think this it'd be great if Apple could figure out a way to get this in. You know, I certainly respect Alex. I want that capability. I want quick on my iPhone. There are a number of things I want on my iPhone that I see out there that are available. Better voice recognition would be probably top of the list.
Well, some voice recognition. I mean, they don't have any at all.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple applications out there, but you're right. You know, it's not well implemented. So it's just a shame Apple's taking this route and seems to be doing so in such a heavy-handed, but worse, inconsistent fashion.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, if you look at what they're doing, for example, you take a look at the push notification service. We were supposed to see that in September, I believe. And, it's the 29th. I don't think that we're going to see an update that brings the push notification. And, you know, I know this is probably covered under NDA, Alex, but have you heard anything about the push notification?
Well, I didn't get the new firmware, so I'm just speculating, but I heard online that 2.2 is going to have the push notification in it.
So they did see that out to developers, assuming for the push notification.
So I guess technically some people got it in September, I guess.
Okay. So, yeah, I think that what we're seeing is a very overworked and understaffed Apple right now, at least in regards to the App Store and the iPhone. And it makes a lot of sense if you look at, you know, the trend as far as, you know, how long it took for them to get the SDK out there, how long it took them to perfect, and it's still not even perfect with 2.1. I'm still getting some crazy bugs and odd things, but it's much, much better. But still, it's been taking
except
a
for
long...
Safari.
Safari, it's nice and crashy.
It's consistently crashy. Still.
Oh yeah, and I'm having a lot of problems with acquiring GPS a lot of times too. So, but you know, yeah. if you look at it, it seems like it's not so much them trying to have, you know, an unreasonable amount of control over it. And it's more that it seems like they're kind of understaffed and it's taking them a lot longer to perfect all these different things. And so I think that over time we will see, because Apple, I think Apple really does pay attention to installer and the jailbreak community. Because, I mean, if you look at the App Store, it's obviously inspired by installer. So I think that they're going to recognize, like you said, Chuck, you want to see Quick on your iPhone. I definitely want to see Quick. I love Quick. And you know, I've talked about it a lot. I think all these applications that don't work on the iPhone right now, like Quick, because it just doesn't have the access in the SDK, things like Podcaster, I'm not sure about, because that's a whole different thing with as far as them, you know, not wanting to, you know, have a competitor for iTunes in there. So I think we have two different problems going here. I think we have, you know, them, you know, just having to keep catching up with the demands of the users, but also we have these sets of rules that aren't really based on their capabilities at this point. They're just kind of there for whatever reason. Apple doesn't want a competing mail application. They don't want a competing podcast application. And I can understand that if they want, you know, they're developing their own podcatcher into the iPhone, which would be phenomenal. And I think that a lot of people would like that. But if you look at, you know, not having a mail competitor in there, I mean, I don't think they're really making any money off of mail. I mean, who cares if someone wants to use, you know, this other mail application over mail.app? I don't know. It's really frustrating, and I think that it mostly comes from them just being so overworked and busy with everything going on that they're just making these decisions without truly thinking about them.
Michael, I've forgotten is the one application that was in questionable taste that played different sounds. Is that the only application that has been rejected that I know, Jeff, I know.
Chuck, your eloquence is beyond reproach.
Well, the question I keep asking, though, it seems like so many of the things that we've heard about being rejected have to do with bringing potentially significant amounts of data across AT&T's network. And I'm not trying to let Apple off the hook. I'm just asking the question. Could AT&T be the one that we need to look at? Could the contract between Apple and AT&T or the agreement be the thing that is causing some of these rejections? Or can you show me an app that's been rejected that absolutely just does not bring across that much information?
I am rich.
Well, I'm not sure that's a good example.
I know. It's not a good example at all. I think the mail application is a good example. There's not a lot of data that's being brought across there, and it's only being brought across when, you know, when you're using the application, it certainly doesn't use any more than, you know, Pandora or AOL Radio or Last.fm or anything like that. You know, Podcaster, I can definitely see, would use up quite a significant amount of bandwidth, you know, if you're subscribed to a lot of podcasts and you're downloading them.
But I just want to say something right there is that the reason that the downloading part is so important is that you could download while you're on Wi-Fi. Because, like, on Wi-Fi, it only takes a few minutes to download all your podcasts. You're not going to be – if you wanted to stream, you could just use the web app. You know, that's already available.
True. Yeah. So you can't download your subscribed podcast over the cellular network, or can you?
Well, you could, but it takes so long that it's really – I mean, I don't see why you'd want to download it over the cellular. I mean, I guess if you were in a bind, you could.
Yeah,
the whole point is that you go into like a McDonald's or something and you sync up really fast all your podcasts.
Yeah. It's interesting. I don't know if it has anything to do with AT&T, and I think certainly some applications are being rejected because, you know, of AT&T's involvement, such as, you know, NetShare. But, you know, it's difficult to say, honestly. It's interesting.
I don't really agree with that, because there's plenty of streaming apps.
Yeah.
I don't really think it's a streaming issue. There's only so much you could stream over a cellular network, you know?
I don't disagree with you, Ox. I'm asking the question. It just seems like this is something that if it did become widespread, you could clearly start to bog down the network, but it doesn't seem very likely. I'm waiting for somebody to say, okay, I've got a new word processor and Apple rejects it for whatever reason. You know,
because we already have the Notepad application.
Yeah, thank you. There you go.
Right.
You know,
yeah, well,
then
I'm just. Yeah, I know. Yeah, well, yeah, exactly.
So you don't think that the mail application is a good example of that?
I don't know, because I don't know what. I haven't seen the other mail application, obviously. I don't know how much you could be shoving across back and forth if you really wanted to. Could you become a spammer from a mobile phone?
I suppose you could.
Yeah, but not over Edge or 3G. I mean, they're just not fast enough to send out any major band, you know. They're just not fast enough to do anything on them.
Yeah.
I guess I'm always looking for the reason, because I just don't think Apple... Apple does very few things just arbitrarily. Usually they have a reason. Whether it's a good one or not is up for debate. But I'm still trying to find the logic here. So maybe we're just missing a piece.
Yeah. And I do want to mention that you've been cut off from provisioning any ad hoc applications. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, they cut me off a few days later.
Yeah. And what I heard was that you were actually – were you making new new application versions, and so you could send out another 100 ad hoc provisions? Is that how it works, or do you only have 100 provisions that you can send out for per developer?
Well, the email that they sent me was pretty much said that you know, I've been rejected, and that I could share with my family and friends. So that's pretty much what I was doing. I don't really know how much I could say at this point, because they really made it clear they don't want anybody talking about it.
Gotcha.
But, you know, pretty much everybody's guessed it right.
Well, yeah, that's another thing that we've recently seen with all this, is that the NDA actually approves to rejection letters at this point, which I think, you know, is, you know, one of Apple's moves of, you know, covering their butt and making them, you know, trying to make it not look so bad. You know, they do a lot of that censorship in the forums. Do they still do that, Jeff, in the Apple forums these days?
I see it every now and then, but not like I used to.
Okay.
Now, keep in mind that I'm following the feeds through RSS. So it's possible that I'm missing some of the conversations that are getting axed, but it doesn't look like it's as bad as it used to be.
Okay. But yeah, what do you think about how the NDA covering the rejection letters? It doesn't seem like there's any, I mean, there's obviously no sensitive data or information in a rejection letter. Is it just them?
You know, putting a rejection letter under NDA, as long as it doesn't include sensitive data, makes no sense to me at all, because as a developer, you're probably going to talk about your application before you complete it so that there's consumer interest when it hits the App Store. So if you do all the build-up and then you just don't talk about it, eventually everyone's going to start asking, you know, where is it?
Now,
and when you say, well, I can't say, okay, well, now we all know. So we've just defeated the purpose of the NDA.
But you got to wonder, does the NDA actually cover the fact that you were rejected, or just, you know, posting the letter itself, Alex? Like, can you say I've been rejected, but just not post the letter?
Well, I mean, you have to be able to tell people that you were rejected. I mean, they can't. Do they expect you not to mention the app at all until it's been approved? And that's the only time you could start talking about it.
That's got to be what it is. It's got to be that you can't.
You just probably can't say the reason.
You can't really reproduce the letter on your blog or whatever. And I think that they've been really tightening down on that. I don't know if they're going after you yet, Alex. Do you still have the letter posted on your website?
You know, I just left it up. It was only a line from it.
Yeah.
They haven't really contacted me at all, and I don't really think they care that much, but I think they're just saying from now on, just, you know.
Okay.
Because everybody already knows what I said. I mean, it's been copied to 1,000 places, so.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't really matter if I take it down, and they know that.
Right. Okay, so let's move on past this. The really interesting story, China Mobile, I don't know if you guys have heard about this, but China Mobile would like to get an iPhone 3G without any Wi-Fi. The reason they're trying to do that is because they want to actually stripped out no Wi-Fi and no 3G, basically just because they want to, because they don't have a lot of widespread 3G in their area, but also they don't have, I'm not really sure about why they want to remove Wi-Fi from the iPhone, but Jeff, what do you think about having an iPhone that's tailor-made to a specific carrier that has features pulled out of it?
Okay, well, first, I think that the reason they want Wi-Fi pulled out is because of some regulation, some government regulation. I believe that's what they're claiming. But I'm not seeing Apple going for that. I mean, they've done the one concession that they have to make for sales in certain countries, which is making an unlocked version available.
Exactly, and that's what they're doing in Hong Kong. They're selling an unlocked version of the iPhone 3G.
Right, and so now they're selling the phone without having a carrier,
right,
which I find to be very interesting. I think this is actually a big statement on Apple's part, which is, you know, look, if you don't want to play ball with us, screw you. We'll distribute the iPhone ourselves, and we don't care which carrier gets it.
Yeah, that's what it does seem like. It seems like both of those stories go hand in hand, that, you know, they're saying we want this out of the iPhone. We don't want all these features. And we're hearing exactly what I would have hoped to hear from Apple in that situation, which is, you know, like you said, screw you. We're just going to release the phone unlocked. Now, do we? So I guess it's just Apple's website. They're selling it unlocked iPhone 3Gs. How soon is it going to be until we? Because I don't think that we've seen this in other countries, that you can just buy it from Apple's website and have them send it to you totally unlocked. How long is it going to be until we see, you know, people buying these unlocked iPhones in the U.S.? And does Apple care?
When's the next flight from Hong Kong to San Francisco?
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going. I'm expecting to see a reverse gray market. So instead of having people buy the phones in the U.S. and send them over to China, I'm expecting we're going to see the China iPhone 3G get bought up and shipped over here for people to buy unlocked.
Yeah, it's from what I'm looking at, the 16 gigabyte version is $695 U.S. in China. So do you think people are willing to pay that for an unlocked iPhone?
Of course they are.
Yeah.
People have been willing to do it outside the United States, and we don't have to limit it to the United States. Any market where the iPhone is locked to one or two carriers is a potential market for gray market, legit China iPhones.
Yeah, why wouldn't you? If you are in a location that does not have AT&T service, and you really want an iPhone, it's going to be a small price to pay to satisfy.
And to know that your iPhone won't brick after software updates come out. That's a big plus too.
Yeah. Can you just go to apple.com/store or apple.com.cn/store and then just buy your iPhone 3G right there and have them ship it to your house in America? Or do you have to have a China credit card and
address? Assume it expects you to have a credit card in China.
Okay. That's interesting. I can definitely see people, you know, buying them and taking them over here. I can see that happening pretty quickly.
Especially, I could just see it being really easy to get one on eBay. I mean, maybe it'll be like $1,000.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I haven't even checked on eBay. I wonder are they selling these right now? I guess it says, you know, I'm reading.
They're selling right now.
They're selling them right now.
Just can't even use eBay anymore. It's just a mess.
Is it? I've been using eBay for a while, and I'm working on reviewing the eBay application, but I've actually been buying event tickets on eBay. And is that illegal, Jeff? Do you know?
It depends on where you live. In certain states, reselling tickets like that is a violation of state law. In other places, it's not. You can't do it in Colorado, I can tell you that.
Yeah, we're doing that in Illinois constantly, and it's the first time I started recently doing that over the summer, and it seems to be working pretty well. But I'm looking for unlocked iPhone 3G. Why am I using that search string?
Yeah, but all the ones you're going to find are going to be unlocked by like a hacker somewhere.
Yeah, these are going to be crap, just, you know, whatever you would normally see on eBay.
I'll try looking for China iPhone or something like that.
China. Unlocked iPhone 3G China.
Better luck using Google to search eBay.
I have one. Here we go. Unlocked from China. Use worldwide. Starting bid is $350. Nobody's bid on it yet. And
you should bid on it.
Oh, I don't know. Oh, this is a first generation iPhone. Mm. Wah, wah. Anyway, I'm taking a huge gamble surfing to eBay with all the Skype problems that we're having. Anyway, it's very interesting, and I know that I think that in Australia they have unlocked iPhones, and in various other countries they've had unlocked iPhones. But you've had to buy them directly from a carrier, right?
Right.
Okay. So this is a brand new thing. So people in China, go out and get yourself an iPhone, a nice shiny unlocked one, and if you want, buy yourself another one and sell it to some person in the U.S. That'd be nice.
That's called capitalism.
Yes. All right. Moving on. Let's talk about the iPhone 3G at Best Buy. I mentioned this last week but 2 weeks ago I talked to the guys at Best Buy about the iPhone 3G, and they said, "Oh yeah, the standard protection plan that you can get for devices and cell phones at Best Buy, that totally works with an iPhone 3G." So I thought that was okay. You know, some random dude at a Best Buy who is probably just kind of heard that and doesn't really know what he's talking about. So I contacted Best Buy's PR department. And sure enough, you can buy, they call it the Geek Squad Black Tie Protection Plan. And you can buy, it's $15 a month, but it covers everything except for water damage and theft. So is this significant?
Those are like the two biggest things that happen to the phone. I mean, those are the two things I would want covered.
Theft and water damage. Well, what about
water?
Water
is like the biggest thing. I'm always afraid of dropping it in the sink or like bending over the toilet or something.
Supposed to bring your iPhone into the bathroom, though.
But, it's in like my top pocket or something. I don't want it falling out of there. I always have to.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, who doesn't take their iPhone in the bathroom? Let's just be honest here. Come on.
I can't say that I don't take it in there.
Well, say you're at work or something. You're not going to leave it. You know.
Yeah.
You're
exactly. Take it with. Well, I think that, the even more so than water damage and theft, I think that, dropping the iPhone and having a big crack in your screen is the most significant problem that I've heard with people in iPhone damage. And it does cover that. So you can, as far as I know, you can just break it, take it in, and they'll either exchange it for you right there in the store, or you send it in and you get it back pretty quickly. This is pretty expensive, though. Jeff, what do you think? Is this a good thing? Does this mean anything?
I think it's just part of Best Buy's marketing. And that's what it comes down to. If I bought a new iPhone at Best Buy, I would not buy their protection plan. And if someone that works for Best Buy wants to contact me and explain to me how this really is a good thing, I am more than happy to listen. And if they sway me and if they're right, I will come back on the show and say, hey, guess what? I was wrong. But I'm hard-pressed to come up with a good reason to really buy a plan like this. First off, it doesn't cover the things that people are going to deal with most, dropping it in the toilet right there, or someone steals it. Those are the two biggies right there. Although gravity and post-deceleration shock syndrome, that's a big one too.
Yeah.
But I'm not feeling the love from this protection plan.
You think it's too expensive, or do you think it just doesn't have enough to cover it?
I think it costs too much for what it is. And if you really want to have that kind of protection, why don't you take that $15 a month and just put it away somewhere? And then when you get closer to when your iPhone is ready to be replaced because the new model's coming out, hey, guess what? You'll probably have about enough money to buy a new iPhone.
Yeah, and in the meantime, use like one or two of those $15 a month to go out and get a nice case.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. Because it's going to be about a year, and you go out and you protect your phone for the year, and then you go get another iPhone, and everything's all happy.
Check it out. We're financial advisors now. Sweet.
Sweet.
I think this is brilliant on Best Buy's part, because this distinguishes them from going to AT&T. This just distinguishes them from going to an Apple store. If you go to either one of those options, you can't buy any insurance.
Yeah.
You have to engage in that. This way, Best Buy has something unique to offer. Is it overpriced? Yeah, I'm kind of with Jeff. For my money, I think it is. On the other hand, I think it depends on who the owner or the user of the iPhone is going to be. If you're going to give an iPhone to someone who is a known klutz, or maybe with all due respect to some of the kids listening out there, they don't always take as good a care of these things as they should. Maybe $15 is not a bad investment if you're going to give it to a son or daughter who has a tendency to break things. But I think the differentiation factor is huge here.
Okay. Yeah, and I think that, obviously having Best Buy, with the iPhone 3G is a great thing for Apple and Best Buy, because, Best Buys get much more foot traffic than AT&T stores. I don't know about Apple stores as well, but I'm guessing that, there are way more Best Buys than there are Apple stores, definitely. So, it's a great thing to have that extra differentiator. And of course, the guy told me right up front, we can offer insurance on the iPhone 3G, and the Apple stores and the AT&T stores can't. So I think they're being trained to actually push this, and you might be right about that, Chuck, that they're really trying to get in there and have something that, says, hey, buy it at Best Buy instead. So, yeah, there it is. Apple has recently announced that they're going to, they're allowing people to, what do you call it? It's the start at home, or the buy at home and finish it at the store program for the iPhone 3G. It says to buy your iPhone 3G, start here and finish at the Apple retail store. And basically the point of this whole thing is to, give Apple your billing information, review your eligibility, and also select your plan. And the idea is once you've done that, I guess you, Jeff, how does that work? Do you schedule an appointment and then you go in and they have your information there, or do you print something off and bring it in?
I'm assuming that they'll have your information there. I'm not really sure how that part works.
Now, the bigger question...
Assume that the account would be there waiting for you when you go in, and that it's somehow tied to the serial number of your iPhone.
Yeah. Now, the bigger question, though, is... Does this matter? Is this a really big deal? Or, I don't understand why, if Apple's going to go this far and take your billing information, take your social security number, do a credit check, and have you select a plan, why don't they just sell the iPhone that way from their website?
My guess is because AT&T will freak out.
Because
second that.
Yeah, I think it all comes down to AT&T. And Apple is taking baby steps towards bringing back the original iPhone purchasing method, you know, which I thought was awesome. You just buy the thing online and you're done.
Yeah, that was fantastic. And, you know, I want to keep mentioning this as many times as I can. If you're one of those people who don't like, you know, the idea of having, you know, an Apple employee or even worse, an AT&T employee open up your iPhone and you know, play with it first before you get to touch it, you can tell them, you know, hey, I want to take this home and activate it at home after you get all the stuff set up. And I don't know how willing they are to do that at an AT&T store, because I'm pretty sure they're trained to actually take it out of the box and do it, and that's the only way it works. But if you do it at an Apple store, for the most part, I'm pretty sure you can just say, hey, I want to take this home and do it there, and they'll be fine with that. So, because there's nothing special about the iTunes at AT&T or Apple. It'll work just the same at your house as long as you have an account set up with that, you know, that phone and the IMEI and all that stuff. So do you think that this is significant for the people wanting to go out and buy an iPhone? Or do you think, I heard that this may be, you know, in preparation for the Christmas shopping season, that they're trying to get the lines moving quicker, so there aren't really big lines outside the Apple stores.
Well, I think it's also, you said the Christmas buying season, and I think that's the big thing. You can do the whole thing online and have the box shipped to you, and then wrap it up and put it under the tree, which is something that you couldn't do when the iPhone 3G first came out, because you had to go in the store. So your options were you buy someone a gift card, or you just take them into the store, or, you know, it's fun though to be able to get the present. It's the real thing. And I think there's a big psychological thing there. So I think that has a lot to do with the timing of the new service.
So you think that you said that they'd have the box shipped out to you. Do you think that that's what they're pushing for, or do you mean that you could just get it from your Apple store and take it home and put it under the tree? Is that what you mean?
Well, I'm assuming that they'll actually ship you the phone. I don't know.
No, you have to go into the store and actually pick it up.
Okay, see, this is the problem with me going on vacation, because I miss really key points like that.
Yeah, you actually have to, that's why I think it's kind of goofy, is that you go to the store online, or to the Apple store, or just apple.com, and you give them all this information and all that, and then you go in there and you get everything set up with them at the store, and then they give you the iPhone.
Okay, so I clearly need to recant on everything that I've just said, and I am now changing my opinion to... As far as a holiday thing goes, nah, I don't think it's that great. But as far as something that you can use to not have to wait in line, and there are a lot of people where not waiting in line is very important, that's who will like this.
Yes.
I can't wait to find out what else we talk about that I am completely misunderstanding.
This is why I send out the links, Jeff.
Oh, like I'm ever going to open those.
I know that you probably know most of this stuff anyway, because you're covering it on MacObserver.com.
True, except for, you know, the last week when clearly I shouldn't have been on vacation.
We'll edit all this out.
Or leave it in.
We'll leave it in. Or edit it out.
It's fine.
Okay, last thing on our list, let's talk about the, I guess it's going to be brief, the Apple seeding the 2.2 beta to developers. This is another, you know, point release, which I think is very significant, because a lot of the, you know, stuff that doesn't really matter that much, not many changes come with, you know, 0.0, you know, whatever releases. The big changes definitely come with the point whatever stuff. So it's exciting to see that. And I'm guessing that we'll see the push notifications in this 2.2 software when it is released, but it was sent out to developers. And really the only thing that we've seen so far in, you know, that has been leaked out from the developer community is that Safari has gotten a couple interface changes. The big change is that Google, that your search bar is now, actually integrated right up there with the address bar. So there's no little magnifying glass button there. It's now just right there. And the refresh and stop button is also in the address bar. So not a really huge thing. But you know, it is a change. And, I think that more stuff is happening, you know, outside of that, maybe, you know, down, you know, within the OS and various things like the push notification services.
You know what I think would be a really cool feature to add to Safari and iPhone software 2.2? Not crashing.
It looks like
the feature that I want.
It looks like they are giving Safari some attention, so maybe they're working on that.
I hope so.
Am I the only one that's...
I haven't experienced any crashes in Safari.
Yeah, neither have I, Alex. I don't know. Yeah, what does Jeff do to this phone? Because I don't have any trouble either.
I have no problem with Google Reader, Gmail. I don't. Those are probably the big two that I go to. So maybe those two work great.
Okay, that could be. But I have found that I can just hit almost any website, and without consistency, just across the board, Safari will just crash on me. And I've even been on Apple's webpage and had Safari go down. The other day it went down so hard that my iPhone restarted on its own.
Oh, you had one of those. You had a kernel panic on your phone.
I had a total kernel panic on my phone in Safari.
See, you know, I wasn't really thinking about it that much and not thinking that I had any crashes. Now that I'm thinking about it, I was on the train into Chicago and doing a lot of work on my phone and looking through Twitterific and bringing up links and all that. And I was getting some really consistent crashes with just about everything. After, you know, about a minute or so of being on a page and reading something, it would just die on me, you know. And it was across the board with WebKit. So if I was using it in Twitterific or in Safari, it was just crashing on me. But I think I restarted it and restarted the phone, and then at that point it did start working out for me. But you know, 2.1 hasn't been completely solid and perfect. There are certainly some more problems that they need to work out. But for the most part, the phone is pretty usable at this point. What else do we want to see out of a 2.2 besides copy paste?
Nothing.
Nothing else besides copy paste. Well, I would like to see something, maybe some improvements to the maps application. I would love to see, so maybe some Street View, because Android has that, and I'm kind of jealous that Android has a Street View. And maybe some turn by turn directions that actually work, as you're going, you know, through the and maybe we'll recalculate if you venture off the course.
You know, that would be so cool, the turn by turn thing. I ended up using my GPS in my iPhone so much when I went to Santa Fe for vacation, and then when I went to Santa Rosa for the Mac Computer Expo, because in both cases I ended up with maps that sucked. And so I ended up in places that clearly were not where I thought I was going on the map. And the GPS worked so well in those situations. But had I been able to just let it do turn-by-turn directions on its own, I would have known quicker that something had gone wrong.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously the GPS thing, totally, it saves my butt many, many times when I'm, I venture off and go the wrong way. And, it's much more useful, especially if you're going on there's a place when I go to to an Apple store about an hour away from me, there's an exit that's really the same exact exit. It's just north and south. And of course, Google Maps does not tell me. It just says, take the exit that is the correct exit. And I say, well, I don't know what the correct exit is, but I'm going to try. And, many, many times I've taken the wrong exit. Finally, using the GPS, I know exactly where I am and which exit is the wrong one to take. And it definitely saves me, because if you go, 20 minutes in the wrong direction, that can definitely happen. That happened when I had my first generation iPhone. But, thankfully with the GPS, that certainly helps. So I love the GPS. I would just like to see a lot more out of the Maps application itself. I don't want to see a third-party application. I want to see something great happen with Maps.
And yeah, that'd be cool.
And I want to see the Bright Kite iPhone app. What happened to that? I've been checking the Bright Kite blog at blog.brightkite.com quite often, and I haven't seen any changes. They say that they're working on an iPhone application, but I haven't seen it. And I would love to have Bright Kite because I like Bright Kite.
I like Bright Kite too.
What is that app? What's Bright Kite?
Bright Kite, Jeff, you want to explain it because you use it more than I do.
Well, Bright Kite, it's like another one of the social networking applications, and it will let you see what people around you, like physically around you, are doing if you want. And people can follow you. You can follow other people, and you can post messages like you do on pretty much all the services. The way I use it, I set it up so that when I take photos on my iPhone that I want to share with people, I send them to my special Bright Kite email address, and the subject line becomes my Twitter message. So I post pictures to Bright Kite, and then they show up on Twitter with a link, and people can click on them and go back and see things, which Chuck, I believe that's probably how you first got to meet Baby Bunny.
I think so. What's the differentiation between that and TwitPic, Jeff?
It's a different service.
Thank you.
Well, I think that Bright Kite is even more integrated, right? Because obviously you have the "Where are you right now?" thing. So it's location based, and you say, you know, you update that wherever you go, and you say "I'm here," and you can integrate that with Twitter, of course, which is really cool. You can and so really you can tweet. So what happens is you send out a message from Bright Kite, and that comes out as a tweet saying "I'm," you know, if you said "I'm at the movies," it'll also give you a link to a map on Bright Kite where you are at that point. You can also send out, you know, picture messages that, you know, it's "I'm at the movies" with a picture of you with your friends or something like that. It'll show up in Twitter, and you can also see it on a map. And so it's very cool to track where everyone else is. It's just another one of those location-based, you know, "I'm here, I'm eating, you know, I'm at a restaurant, I'm eating food, who wants to come out for lunch," you know, that kind of thing. But it's one of the implementations of the whole location-based social networking thing that really seems to work for me, at least. And they really have put a lot of work into that. And I'm assuming that's why we haven't seen Bright Kite, a native version, yet on the iPhone. Because I know they have a beta version. I didn't actually get in on that, unfortunately. But they've seeded it out, and I assume they're working really diligently with all the people who have signed up for the beta. And hopefully it's going to be a really, really good application, especially, you know, I wonder if they're going to hold off until the push notification services come out, because that would be fantastic, you know, especially for something that's, you know, like that, as well as, you know, Twitter. I would love to see that with Twitter too. So yeah, if you want to check that out, their progress, they haven't posted recently, but that's blog.brightkite.com. And I think brightkite.com, you can, you know, check it out. I think it's invite only still. Is that right, Jeff?
I'm not sure if it is, but
check it out.
As I recall, I believe Bright Kite, the people that are doing the development, are in Denver. So maybe I can get hooked up with them and get some more info.
You got to go down there and knock on their door and say, "Hey, dudes, where's our app?"
Yeah. All right. Fine. I'll go down with like my big boots on and kick the door in and put some apps.
Make sure someone films it and puts it on YouTube.
Yeah, I need someone with Quick so that we can get it online right away.
I'll come down there and help you with that.
Oh, great. It'll be fun.
Okay, it does look like it's invite only still. Get invite. Okay, yeah. So I believe I still have some invites. I think I have maybe 10 or 15. I'm checking it out right now, and I have 10 invites. So if you want an invite, Twitter me. Michael Johnston on Twitter. And I'll get you hooked up with some invites. Jeff, do you have any invites to Bright Kite?
I think I do.
Yeah, you probably have a couple.
I probably do.
Yeah, so hit Jeff up, Jay Gamet, if you want to give him away, I guess. I guess I volunteered you for that.
Well, but before the volunteering sticks, let me log in real quick. Make sure that I haven't given them all away.
Okay. Yeah, they seem to keep refreshing themselves after a while. So, you know, it's really cool. I'm looking at
I have 10 now.
Cool.
So they gave me more.
Yeah. So I'm looking at stuff Jackie Chang actually sent out a Twitter that said, you know, frying some plantains. I guess, for dinner. And it's just a picture of her frying some stuff in a pan. And it says, you know, in Chicago, Illinois, about 4 hours ago. It's very cool. So check that out. If you want to Bright Kite, I'll send. What's that?
I was going to say, I used Bright Kite a lot when I was at the MCE Expo. I took pictures on the expo floor and was posting those throughout the day. And actually, I did that when I was in Santa Fe on my vacation too.
Yeah, you did that. You did that quite a bit at New Media Expo.
Yeah, I did. I have found that the Twitter Bright Kite combo for me is really great when I'm out at these events, because it gives me a very easy way to post pictures and comment on things and make all the people that are following me on Twitter feel like they're a little bit more involved in the event.
Yeah. Now, help me out with this. I know that you can integrate it with Twitter, but how much integration can you get? Is it only when you post like an image, or can you have it set up so every time you send out a message through Bright Kite that it comes also through Twitterific or Twitter?
Right. You can choose which way you want it to work.
Okay. So I can have it say it. So it's always location based, because with Twitterific on the iPhone, they kind of change something around. And so now it doesn't actually update your current location. Whenever you send out a Twitter, it just kind of says, you know, Rockford, Illinois or whatever.
Right. So yeah, you can have Bright Kite push all of that info out. I just choose to have it send out my photos only.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. All right, let's move on to our iPhone picks. Jeff, what do you have for us this week?
I have a card game, which is actually saying quite a bit, because I typically don't get into the card game, computer card games. The exception is Burning Monkey Solitaire, which is not available on the iPhone. I love Burning Monkey Solitaire. And anyone that's into the game, you know, that you just have to love a monkey that says, "Have you seen my jujubes?" that's right. We're not talking about Mac apps. Okay. Pro 21 Blackjack.
Ooh, I've been playing with this.
And I've been playing with the sponsored version because it's free. And I think it's really good. It plays really well, and it feels very realistic to me. I'm saying this as if I'm like some card shark.
You're right.
Yeah, but the graphics are nice, and it's easy to play. It's easy to figure out, and I like it.
It's nice and quick. That's what I like about it.
Yes. I can lose money really fast.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can make money really fast, too. But the good thing about it is it's totally tailored toward, you know, iPhone / you know, just general phone usage. Because a lot of times when you want to play a game, you're waiting in line at the terminal, waiting for your plane or something like that. You have a couple minutes to kill, and you just, you know, whip out the iPhone and play a little bit of, you know, whatever. Blackjack is fun. And, you know, it's really quick. You can go through and lose a lot of money very fast. So
It's all virtual money.
Yes, and it's Pro 21 Blackjack. They have a sponsored version, which is free. Do we know how much the non-free version is?
I have no idea. I'm going to assume it's like $10 or something.
I think it's about that too. What kind of? Because I haven't actually checked out the free version. What kind of ads are in there? How does that work?
The way it works, there's like a couple static ad images that come up when you go to play your game.
Okay.
And so you either sit through them, which takes, I don't know, several seconds, or if you get tired, tap one of the ads when it comes up, and then a little dialogue will come up and ask you if you want to skip the ads, and you can say yes, and it just takes you right to the game. Okay. So the ads are not obtrusive. Although, if you're like really into the, I gotta play, and just keep going through games really fast.
Yeah, that'd be me.
Okay, so you'd probably want the paid version so you don't have to stop and tap and get rid of the ads and keep going.
Cool. Okay, I think it's like 10 or 15 bucks, and it's called 21 Pro Blackjack. It's in the App Store. Alex, what is your iPhone pick?
Oh, well, I can really only talk about apps that I don't really use too many apps from the App Store because I just don't have time. But the one app that I've always used since it came out is the remote app.
Yes.
And I mean, not a lot of people bring it up. You know, they brought it up in the beginning, but it's just made using the Apple TV just like a pleasure to use.
Oh, you know? Absolutely. And Jeff, you need to get an Apple TV because you're going to so love using the Apple TV with your iPhone. And I did actually want to bring up a remote as a pick. Because that isn't my pick, but I wanted to bring it up because they recently updated it and they added some great features. Of course, they added the Genius playlist creation, which is awesome because Genius rocks. But you can also edit and create playlists on your iPhone that, you know, on your computer right from the phone in the remote application, which is really, really cool. And I'm already thinking about this, and I don't want to give out too much info on this, but I'm planning a party in San Francisco for Macworld, and but you know, one of the things I thought about, you know, what kind of music are we going to play there? And I thought, well, you know what? I'll just have the remote app and I'll just keep adding music to my playlist as it goes. And I'll be able to control it right from my iPhone, wherever I am mingling with people. And it'll be really cool. So, and the other thing that it did, it was kind of weird the way that the remote speakers work. So if you have an Apple TV with remote speakers set up or whatever, it actually changed the way that works. So now it's right within the now playing screen. So you tap the screen to bring up the little scrub bar, and it'll also bring up the speakers select list. So it's improved. It's cool. The remote application. It's Alex's pick. It's free in the App Store, and that's awesome. Grab it. It's a must have.
So Michael, you said that you're planning a party for Macworld. You need to make sure that you get coordinated with me so that it doesn't interfere with Cirque du Mac, because I'm sure that there's people that are going to want to go to both. So.
Oh, I'm going to Cirque du Mac. I already talked to Dave. We were actually planning on doing it on a Wednesday, but we decided not to.
Smart move.
Yeah. When Cirque du Mac is on a Wednesday, and I'm not allowed to say anything more.
That's right.
Okay. Get the rubber hoses out. Let's get it out of him.
Jeff knows, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay, cool. We're gonna have a secret together. Anyway, Chuck, what is your iPhone pick?
I don't know how to follow that. my pick is Stitcher Radio. I don't know if you guys have played with this. I really like the fact that I can get customized content, and when it's music, I want Pandora, but Stitcher lets you choose from a number of different basically channels. Some are podcast based, but some are a little more commercial content, NPR, CNN, ESPN, that kind of thing. You pick your channel, and it will start to play you basically customized content for that channel. There is an Apple and Mac channel, which contains a number of podcasts of friends that we already probably subscribe to. But the business and finance channel is where I usually land, because the content there is updated with a decent amount of regularity, so that if I get in the car or if I have a few minutes sometime and I want to see what's going on, I don't have to try to find a radio station that, you know, is off my timing schedule, and I don't have to hit a website and try to figure out what I've seen or what I haven't. I can just plug this in my ear and go. And I really like it. It's free on the App Store, and there is a companion website so that you can customize the channels and your playlist to what you like.
So this is kind of like a podcatcher app, right?
In a way, I hesitate to call it that, because not all of the things that are on there, at least as far as I know, are quote-unquote podcasts.
Gotcha. Okay, I wasn't sure about that, because I know there are a lot of podcasts on there. We're on there, actually, as well as the Mac Geek Gab, and I think Mac OS Ken is on there, and Macworld's podcast, and a bunch of other stuff on there.
Yeah, and that's, you know, most of those I already subscribe to, and so I don't feel the need to, you know, have them pushed to me. But when it comes to other things that I don't want to take up space on my iPhone, or for that matter on my Mac, because they go stale so quickly. Like CNN, you know, I don't need stuff stacking up on my Mac, but this lets me plug it in whenever I want to and hear it, and it works fine. Now, I have to tell you, I'm working with a first generation iPhone, and I've had no issues with it. It comes down just fine.
Streaming over Edge?
Yeah.
Cool. All right, so that's Stitcher Radio. It's free, and that is Chuck's pick. My pick is Sketches, and I've had a long time to check that out. I've actually been playing with it for quite some time. They hooked me up with a pre-release version of it, and now I get to talk about it because it's finally in the App Store. Sketches, if you've if you jailbroke your phone back in the day before the App Store, Sketches is it's the same exact Sketches. It's just greatly improved from that original version. It's very cool. When you open it up, you're presented with all the different. Well, I should mention that Sketches is an application that you use to draw random sketches, and so you can draw with a finger, one finger. You can just draw a little line. You can choose the color. If you use two fingers, you can draw a perfect line. So it has multi-touch built in. You can create all these different geometric shapes. You can make boxes and ovals and filled boxes and all that kind of stuff. It comes preloaded with a whole bunch of other shapes. Like you can draw a goofy little iPhone or a Santa hat or a little pumpkin or something like that. It's very cool. So you can just make the. You can really. It's up to you what you can make, and you and your imagination, and how artistic and crazy you want to get. If you want to do like a quick little doodle, works great. If you want to get really detailed and do something really magnificent, you can do that too with Sketches. So there's a lot of cool stuff that you can do with it. For example, you can use obviously just a blank background to draw on, but you can also choose to use your camera. You can take a picture right away and draw on top of that. You can also choose from pictures that you've already taken and use that as your background and draw on top of that and, give someone a mustache or something. And you can also, it's new for Sketches, at least the App Store version of Sketches, you can actually take and use a web page or even a map as your background starting point. So you can say, I want to grab... a web page. I want to go to apple.com or something, and I want to throw that in there and annotate something, which I think is very cool. So not only can Sketches just simply, be a little art tool, but you can also use it as something. It's kind of like Sketch in a way. Sketch on the Mac is you can throw a picture in there and draw on top of it and type on top of it. You can do all those same things with Sketches. So you can grab a map, you can grab a web page, you can draw a box over something, and actually, after you're all done with that, you can send it out as a tweet. You can hit Twitter, it'll upload it to a service that'll, you can send out a tweet and, type something, and then it'll give a link. You click it, check it out. It's really, really cool. And you can also, it's new in version 1.3 that just came out. You can actually, there's a really, really neat feature called web sharing. So you hop on a Wi-Fi network. You have to actually be on Wi-Fi for this to work. But once you get on there, you can actually bring up a special web page on your computer, Mac or PC. Just bring it up in a web browser, and you can see all of your sketches right there. And you can download them. You don't even have to hook up your computer to grab them. You can just download them right there. In PDF, JPEG, or PNG, and I think that the PDF version is the coolest because it's totally lossless as far as all the little drawings that you put down because they're vector based. So check that out. It's $6. You can check out our review on Sketches at iphonealley.com/reviews/apps, or you can just go /reviews and scroll down. And we'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. And that is it for me, for my pick. I should talk about that bandwidth for the iPhone LA podcast is provided by CashFly at CashFly.com. And don't forget to check out iPhoneLA.com. It's the companion site for this podcast. It's the place to go to get more iPhone news, tips, and reviews. It's updated constantly. If you have a tip or a review that you'd like to put up, just contact us using the contact link at the on the left-hand side of the page and say, hey, I want you to review this application or check out this cool thing that I figured out and post it up as a tip. We try to do that because we get great info from our readers and our listeners. So we thank you if you do that. And you can find show notes for the podcast at iphonealley.com/podcast. And you can send us feedback to podcast@iphonealley.com. And once again, Jeff Gamet joins us from the lovely, the wonderful Mac Observer and iPod Observer. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
It's always a blast. So thanks for having me on.
Definitely. And Chuck Joyner is, of course, at macvoices.com. What else you got going on, Chuck? You got a lot of websites.
Well, I just have a couple things. You can find me also at macnotables.com and themacjury.com.
Yes. And are you on Twitter? You're on Twitter, of course.
Oh, absolutely. I'm on Twitter. And I'm on Twitter.
Twitter.com.
Chuck Joyner on Twitter.
Yep, Chuck Joyner. And Jeff, you are J Gamut.
Right.
And Alex Sukarinski, you obviously created Podcaster. What website can we go to check out? Do you have a blog for that you're posting stuff in?
Well, the best place to go is to nextdayoff.com. And if you already got a provision previously, you'll be able to catch an update in the next few days. Cool. And I'll actually be posting about that update at twitter.com/iPhonePodcaster.
Cool. So it's twitter.com/iPhonePodcaster. Mm-hmm. And, of course, my Twitter is twitter.com/MichaelJohnston. And if you follow me, I'll love you forever. And
so sweet.
Aw, I'll give you – no, I won't give you a cookie. That'll be too many cookies to make. If you run into me at Macworld, I might give you a cookie if you follow me on Twitter.
And they are good cookies.
They're delicious cookies. And on that note, another episode of the iPhone LE podcast is out the door.
An internet. How are we going to communicate this? A stylus. We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Who wants a stylus? You have to get them and put them away, and you lose them. Yuck.
Made up.